Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is Larry Pinkney. It's good to have Larry back. Larry is a former political prisoner. He knows the system from the inside. I know about it from writing about it. And Larry knows about it because he's lived it. He knows what a dirty system it is. He's a Black Panther Party veteran. He formerly served as Republican of New Africa, Minister of Interior. We want to talk about lots of things in the hour we have. Larry, one of the things I want to talk about is the deal that was struck in Geneva. But let me mention one other thing first. It's something that happens all too frequently, and Press TV had me on earlier this morning talking about it. Today, Israeli extremist settlers, facilitated by Israeli police, stormed Islam's third most holy site, the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The Al-Aqsa Mosque. It's an extremely holy site. It means a great deal. And the police, the reports were very, very disturbing. Not only did the police just stand by and let extremist racist settlers storm the mosque, they facilitated their doing it. An extremist rabbi by the name of Yehuda Glick went on hunger strike. He got the police to agree to facilitate what happened today earlier. The area is 6 hours ahead, no, 7 hours ahead of New York time. 8 hours, I believe, ahead of me in Chicago. But the police literally did more than just stand down. They facilitated what happened. They were complicit in a racist attack on Islam's third holiest site. And I wanted to mention it because Press TV had me on, and I was not aware that this happened today. I am aware that this happens all too often. I think the last time before this was probably in October, and it could happen any time. And in September, I believe the last day of September in 2000, Ariel Sharon, surrounded by hundreds, maybe 1,000 or more, Israeli security forces, desecrated the Al-Aqsa compound. He did it manipulatively. He did it in a way that he knew would draw a reaction, and it sure did. And the second intifada followed. Thousands of Palestinians were killed. Many more were hurt. Enormous crimes of war and against humanity were committed. It went on for years. I think it ended about 2005. It's been a long time, but I certainly wrote a lot about it at the time. Just a terrible event, and Ariel Sharon literally did it willfully. So this you have to wonder, will one of these future events, not necessarily today, but will a future event similar to today launch the third intifada? Will thousands more Palestinians die? Will many thousands more be hurt? Will many languish in Israel's gulag? This is the stuff that goes on. Do you think the U.S. media say anything about this? Nothing. Nothing. And when they do, they blame Palestinians for the crimes that Israel commits. Well, I just wanted to get that in because after Press TV had me on and I got a little bit more information about it before I went on, I was absolutely enraged. And again, I've seen this before and it'll happen again. My God, it could happen next week. It could happen anytime, all the time, for any reason. It's a very disturbing thing and so much more goes on. There isn't a single day, not just in the Middle East, but in occupied Palestine, that ordinary nonviolent people have a day of peace and stability. Not a single day exists. Not one. Not one. And I write about this all the time. This morning I wrote an article and I got it out on Israel's, on life in occupied Gaza, Gaza under siege, illegally. Slow motion genocide is the way to describe it. I'm not the only one who does it that way. Israeli historian Ilan Pappe calls it that. Francis Boyle calls it that. That's exactly what it is, slow motion genocide. We had a big day, I should say a big overnight, early Sunday morning, pre-dawn, in Geneva, Switzerland. A deal was struck between Iran and what's called the P5 plus one countries, the five permanent members of the Security Council, America, France, Britain, China, and Russia, and the one country is Germany, the other major country that is not a permanent member. It really should be. Well, the whole Security Council ought to be abolished. That's another issue. Where one country can literally veto the will of the other 193 countries in the world. That's the way the system works. That's the way America designed it back in the late 1940s when the UN Charter was written and the rest of it. to dirty system. Anyway, a deal was struck. I had an article all written yesterday. Larry, I want to get you in on this. I had an article written yesterday. It was all set to go out this morning, and I knew I probably would have to make at least a few revisions before I got it out, because, you know, when you go to bed, you don't know what you're going to find out when you wake up, especially,
right, right.
Especially with something like this. It is literally something in motion that's changing by the hour, possibly. It was more than just a slight change. I literally had to scrap most of what I wrote and write a completely new article, and I absolutely wanted to get something out today, so I just dropped everything and jumped right on it. I salvaged a little bit from the article I wrote, but, oh, at least 80-90% of it I had to throw away. It
wow.
broke my heart to do it. But I got an article out. I covered plenty, and I was lucky, Larry. I found the complete text of the deal that was offered, and I quoted and cited from it in great detail, great detail. I call my article, it's on my blog site, it's top featured. Anybody can see it there, or they can Google it. It's called Deal in Geneva, : Hold the Cheers. I'm less than enthusiastic. Larry, let me let you jump in.
Well, it's always a pleasure. Thanks, my brother Stephen. I, too, have been following as close as I possibly can the really developing occurrences, you know, as you pointed out, with respect to Iran and the rest of the quote unquote world powers that were involved in this deal. What I find extremely striking is the fact that Netanyahu said everything, falling just short of attacking Iran. I mean, it was just utterly disgusting. I was watching a number of different networks. I'm talking about online. I'm not talking about the boob tube or the U.S. media per se. But it was just so disgusting. And I'm not talking about the quote unquote deal. I'm talking about the response, which was obviously planned by the Israeli Zionists. It's crystal clear that there is absolutely no intent on the part of the Israeli government, or really the U.S. government for that matter, but on the part of the U.S. government and Israel, there's no intent to, one, really strive for peace in terms of Iran, not just Iran, but that entire region. Number two, it's very, very obvious, based on Obama, as I call him, the Obamatron, the warmonger, the drone man, based on his response pointing out that he's going to continue overwhelmingly the sanctions against Iran. The sanctions to begin with were ridiculous and are ridiculous and are hurting the everyday ordinary people of Iran, which is, of course, what the U.S. government and the Israelis constantly do, as you just cited the example. By the way, I was not cognizant either of this latest thing that you talked about with respect to the holy site, the mosque being attacked, but I'm certain, you know, by the Israelis, but I'm just not surprised. That's what they do all the time, every single day. Some kind of desecration is being perpetrated, you know, against the Palestinian people. So that's my response. I'm sure you and I are going to get into this the deal in more detail. So I'm going to just turn that back to you. And by the way, it's wonderful hearing your voice, bro.
Oh, Larry, it's great having you on. Yeah, the deal, I think, needs to be examined very closely, and some of the language in it gets very technical. I try to comprehend as much of it as I could. It's not easy to do in some places, and even the wording, I mean, it sounds like lawyers wrote this stuff. I'm sure lawyers did write it, and they write it in language that maybe you need another lawyer to completely understand exactly what they're saying. Some of the stuff that I quoted verbatim, I wanted to put it in my own words, and yet I couldn't quite. I hesitated doing it because I thought I would misinterpret what was said, and what was said It's hard for anybody to read in a few spots in the article that I wrote to understand exactly what they mean by what they said. And I'm sure this is deliberate to give the dark forces, as I like to call them, lots of wiggle room to manipulate this thing any way they want to. Well, there never should have been a Geneva conference. There never should have been a dispute about Iran's nuclear program. It's entirely peaceful. Iran's program is by far the world's most heavily monitored one, literally 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every day of the week. No other nuclear state, there's something like 30, 35 of them in the world that have commercial nuclear operations, the same type of operation that Iran has. None of them are put through this. Israel is the only country in the region that is a nuclear weapons power. That's well known. It's called Israel's dirty secret. Open secret. It's a dirty open secret. I mean, it's very well known now. Israel simply doesn't talk about it. The media don't talk about it. They let it go unmentioned. It's a formidable arsenal. Israel has very sophisticated long-range delivery systems. It makes no bones about being willing to use any and all weapons in its arsenal if it feels threatened enough. It has chemical weapons. It has biological weapons. It uses the latter two in all of its conflicts, and it uses sometimes type of radiological weapons, because the residue has been found in Gaza, it's been found in Lebanon from the 2006 war. So they use some kind of a, I don't know what to call it except a radiological weapon. You know, you don't want to call it an atom bomb because we all have an image of a mushroom-shaped cloud. But it's some sort of radiological weapon that Israel uses in their wars, because you can examine the residue on the ground and you can find radiation. There's only one thing that causes radiation, and that's nuclear weapons of one kind or another. So this is what Israel does. Nobody says a word. Nobody lays a hand on Israel. Israel does whatever it wants. It controls the Congress itself and through the Israeli lobby. There's going to be plenty of dust kicked up in the aftermath of this, because Israel is absolutely apoplectic about what went on. It wants Iran to get nothing. It wants the suffering of the Iranian people to continue. It wants a free hand to control the region. So does America. America wants complete control of Iran's resources, huge amounts of oil and gas. You know, it's the oil stupid, it's the gas. And America covets both of them, long-standing policy. So this thing is it's really kind of a shell game. You go through this charade about an Iranian threat that doesn't exist. You get the media to repeat all the big lies over and over and over again. I mean, this stuff has gone on for years and years. There have been multiple rounds of discussions about negotiations over Iran's program going back at least about 10 years. I didn't know whether anything would come out of this round, but I said, and I wrote before it did, will it matter if anything does happen? Well, something did happen, and I repeat my statement. Will it make any difference? Will it matter? Will U.S. and Israeli policy change going forward? Not a damn bit.
No, not at all. Not at all. In fact, I would dare to state that, to the contrary, what the U.S. and the Israelis will be doing is intensifying, number one, their constant propaganda and lies. They, you know, this propaganda machine would make even the Third Reich pale, but in comparison. What we're going to see is the intensification of the propaganda machine, and quite frankly, we're going to see all kinds of actions by Israel, as well as the United States, which always backs Israel, to do everything it can to cause as much harm on the Palestinian people, on the Iranian people, on the peoples of that region. I mean, let's face it, Israel has conservatively between 200 to 400 nuclear weapons. Nuclear. I'm not even talking about its biological weapons. Nuclear weapons. This, as you said, is the open, dirty secret, or the dirty open secret. Yet, who talks about that? Who discusses that? Who brings that up? That should be front and center in the equation. But it's not. And of course, as you already mentioned, Stephen, the fact of the matter is that U.S. policy is controlled lock, stock, and barrel as it were, by the Israeli or Zionist machine known as AIPAC, which controls totally or virtually totally the United States Congress, both the House and the Senate, and of course the White House. Obama and Biden are both pure, if you will, Zionists. And their interests have never been, just as their predecessors, their interests have never been the interests of everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people in this nation or anywhere in the world. Having said that, I don't mean to get carried away, but I too am utterly just enraged and incensed at the gall, the very gall, to be discussing Iran's so-called nuclear program. And I say so-called because the way it is described, when I say it, I'm referring to the nuclear program in Iran, it is described as if it is offensive. It is not offensive. And let's face it, what in the hell can the United States say about the use of nuclear weapons when it dropped nuclear weapons on two civilian cities? I'm talking about Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and people are still dying to this very day as a result of that, not to mention its use of the United States' use and Israelis' use of weapons that include plutonium, both not only in the Israeli-occupied territories, but when we look at what the U.S. has been doing and continues to do, and I say continues, contrary to what the corporate stream media is saying, it continues to carry out in Iraq, it continues to carry out throughout the so-called Middle East, it continues to just, it's almost beyond belief that people could be so ignorant. And I don't mean to insult anyone, but if we do not dispense with our ignorance and become critical thinkers, we are doomed. Our planet is doomed because these criminals and these bloodsuckers and these liars and these warmongers and the corporations who really run the show, as it were, because we're letting them run the show, are going to doom our planet if we don't do something about it. So I look at what occurred in Geneva. I don't breathe a sigh of relief. What I do breathe is a sigh of deep concern because I know we are dealing with running dog, rabbit, liars, and warmongers. So I'm deeply concerned.
I'm deeply concerned as well, Larry. And I think it's important to distinguish between Israel, a nation state, and Jewish people, belonging to a particular religion. I happen to be Jewish myself. I certainly do not associate myself with the State of Israel. So I'm an American on the one hand, and I certainly dissociate myself from the policies in Washington. So America is a nation state. It's made up of a lot more people than just mostly Christians, but Jews and Muslims and members of most other faiths, especially the better known ones. I imagine there's a Hindu population, a Buddhist population, a good sized Muslim, a larger Muslim population than a Jewish population in America. And these are religions, again, is distinguished from the political nation states. So you've got to distinguish it. As far as Zionism goes, Zionism is the enemy of Jews and non-Jews alike. I consider Zionism my enemy.
You are absolutely, that's deep. And you are so correct, Stephen. You know, the fact of the matter is, and I'm going to just be blunt about it. I can't help myself. Of course, I have very true, valued, and deep friends who are Jewish, quote-unquote, and I put that in quotation marks because I'm not talking about, a quote-unquote religion at all, okay? You're Jewish, as you pointed out. But, you know, the way the media distorts and puts forth this corporate stream media, it's deliberately meant to keep people at each other's throats and to confuse people. So you know, as far as I'm concerned, I look at Zionism as essentially a political philosophy. I look at it as, in fact, more than a very active philosophy, if you will. I do consider it to be the enemy, if you will, Zionism, I'm so glad you said that. It is the enemy not only of non-Jews, but it is the enemy of everyday ordinary Jewish people themselves. And I do not believe at all that the Israeli Zionist state, that is to say their misleadership there, and I did deliberately say misleadership, I do not believe that that misleadership represents the will of Jewish people, the majority of Jewish people, even in Israel itself, not to mention throughout other countries around the world.
There are a lot of good people in Israel, and it doesn't get enough press. It's not a majority, unfortunately, but a lot of good people who absolutely oppose the Israeli system, just like there are good people in America who oppose the policies coming out of Washington. It's a shame this doesn't get more resonance. And even the Israeli press that can be on the good side, I would say the best of the Israeli press comes out of Haaretz, and I quote and I cite from Haaretz all the time, but it can be very mixed. It can have some reports that are excellent, and they have excellent contributors who really do wonderful writing, and I love to quote them at times, writers like Amira Haas and Gideon Levy, but they also have others on the other side who are absolutely hideous. It's almost like Haaretz is Janus-faced. It's two-faced. It's incredible that on the one hand, you can read such wonderful stuff that really informs people and tells them what they need to know. And on the very same page, you'll find an article or two or three or whatever by people who are saying exactly the opposite kinds of things. And it's just horrid. And I scratch my head and I say, what on earth are the editors doing? How can they publish wonderful stuff and at the same time put this rubbish out that has no business in a legitimate publication? Unfortunately, there are lots of other Israeli publications that are much, much worse. And you rarely see anything that's worthy published in them other than direct quotes and stuff that you can use, but it can be pretty horrible stuff, pretty much right-wing, party line, the same kind of stuff that happens in America. But of the mainstream media in America, try finding a mainstream publication that really tells it like it is. If anybody knows about one, send me an email and tell me, because I certainly don't know about it. There are wonderful websites online that have important information, but go down the mainstream. Any major U.S. city publication, newspaper, my own city of Chicago, the Tribune, the New York Times, the Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, L.A. Times, the major publications in cities, the major magazines, they're all party line. They're all propaganda organizations. That's their job. That's the way they do it. They lie to their readers. On television, of course, that's the worst, because most people get the so-called information there. And literally, I mean, they wouldn't dare put out the kind of reports that you would hear on a program like this. If anybody did do it, they'd be fired on the spot, I guarantee.
Yes, yes, yes. And the fact is that this is why I am a strong believer in what I call the people's media, programs such as your program. You know, Stephen, the people's media, we have got to stop being controlled and manipulated and pitted against one another, even against our own common collective interests. And the only people who are going to stop that is we ourselves. We ourselves. No one else is going to do that. Certainly, you know, not the captains, if you will, of this despicable system that we have. They're not going to stop because it's not in their interest to do so. But it is in our interest, everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people who are struggling to make this world, this nation, this planet of Mother Earth a better place, a livable place, you know. So I'm with you. As always, we're on the same page.
Oh, it's an important page to be on, Larry, because it literally is our own personal welfare at stake. I mean, if we're not worried about that, what on earth are we worried about? And you're exactly right. There is no possibility. It gets repeated on this program all the time. There is no possibility, zero, that you can expect anybody in government in Washington to lift a finger to help. The Congress won't do it. The administration won't do it. The closest thing we had that came to it was in the years of Jack Kennedy, and of course Friday was the 50th anniversary of his state-sponsored assassination. We discussed it. I wrote about it. Lee Harvey Oswald had nothing whatsoever to do with it. That's the scam that's been perpetrated all these years. Maybe someday the public will be told forthrightly that, we lied to you all these years. It really wasn't Oswald. It was such and such and so on. So it was the CIA. Who else would be involved in a hit like this? I mean, maybe some mafia types pulled the trigger, but the CIA was the plan behind it. Maybe even Israel had a hand. Although Israel in 1963 didn't have the power it has today, it still had power. The Israeli lobby was around then, nothing, a shadow of what it is today, but it was around. And Israel's beef against Jack Kennedy was he deployed its nuclear weapons. Israel had nuclear weapons going back to the 1950s, began developing them. And Kennedy knew about it. He deployed them. He wanted them dismantled. He supported Palestinian rights. I mean, he really supported them. Can you imagine a U.S. president supporting Palestinian rights before it even became fashionable to support them? My God, in 1963, I knew practically nothing compared to what I know today. And I was 14 years old when Israel became a state. I wanted to say earlier, as far as my upbringing, just very briefly, Larry, I was lucky I had good parents. They taught me to love, not hate. And I say this in all honesty, I can never remember a single time that my mother and father ever uttered a bad word about any people, especially based on their race, their religion, or anything else. I honestly can't remember a single time, and this was the lesson that got taught to me. So whatever good attributes I may have, I owe it all to them.
I hear you. I actually, since we're sharing things, I actually graduated many years ago, back in the 60s, from an all-Jewish high school, Fairfax High School in Los Angeles. I don't know if you're familiar with that school or not, but it was a very enlightening experience for me, because I saw firsthand how the kids, who were then kids, you know, we were 17, 18 years old, but I saw how the Jewish kids were propagandized so thoroughly, and we would often have intense discussion, but when it came right, and I'm talking about myself and the other students, we would have intense discussions, and when it came right down to it, those young people really wanted peace, all right? But they were being propagandized just like everyone else, okay? And the same thing, you know, is happening. In fact, it has been intensified, as you well know, today in the 21st century. You know, as Brother Malcolm X said, we're being bamboozled constantly. I think that in terms of people of goodwill, of good hearts, all right, I think that crosses all ethnic groups around Mother Earth, throughout the globe. But it's being subverted. It's constantly being subverted. I remember, as most people probably do, exactly where I was when JFK was murdered. But it wasn't just the assassination of JFK. This was the assassination of U.S. democracy.
Absolutely. We need to take a break, Larry. Hold your thought, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. Talking with Larry Pinkney. Larry, there's so much that's so disturbing going on in the world, right here in America and, of course, around the world. The Middle East for so long has been a hot spot, and such terrible suffering goes on there, not just in occupied Palestine, but, of course, the war in Syria keeps raging. I think Iran very much continues to be a target. We've discussed on this program before that the issue with countries like Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, and Iran has nothing to do with the governments that run these countries per se. Has nothing to do with whether they're democratic, despotic, or anything in between. whether they're secular or religious. Those things are entirely irrelevant. It has everything to do with whether they're pro-Western leaning.
Mm-hmm.
Washington's ideal is to have pro-Western puppet states, like Hamid Karzai in Afghanistan, who is a U.S.
Right.
stooge, Maliki in Iraq, another U.S. stooge.
Mm-hmm.
Washington wants a third one. Well, you get the stooges involved, installed in Libya. Libya and Iraq, both cauldrons of violence, all because of what America wrought. America wants the same thing installed in Syria and the same thing installed in Iran, and it's willing to go to war to get these things.
That's
so
right.
The issue with Iran is the nuclear issue is a red herring. It's a red herring.
That's right.
Everybody knows. Everybody in positions of authority know it. The Israelis know it. People in Washington know it. European states know it, but they claim otherwise. And the issue is to get rid of Iran's sovereign independence, replace it with a pro-Western puppet state. Same deal that launched the other post-9/11 wars. That's what it's all about. Again, nobody discusses it. The U.S. media won't discuss it, won't say a word about it, and they proliferate the lies about Iran having a nuclear weapons program or maybe heading toward a nuclear weapons program, and there's not a shred of evidence to prove it, nothing, zero, and yet the big lies proliferate. And even though we had this deal struck just hours ago, I think it was consummated around 3 in the morning, Geneva time, and there was a signing ceremony shortly after that. And we'll see what happens going forward. I wish I could put money on it, because I can envision what's going to happen. There'll be events that will be manipulated. Iran will be accused of cheating on the agreement when Iran absolutely will scrupulously abide by it. It has nothing to gain. You always have to ask qui bono. What after Iran agreed to this and they gave up plenty to get little in return? They did it to get a foot in the door, hoping that getting something will lead to something more down the line, maybe a little more in 6 months, maybe a little more still in a year, in 2 years, eventually heading for what they want. They want all sanctions removed. They want complete normalization. They want to be treated like any other country, and they deserve it. And the 75, 80 million Iranians, they certainly deserve it, because they've suffered most throughout all of this. Ordinary civilians are the ones that are harmed the most, and that's the intent of the sanctions that are imposed, and doing
right.
it for that reason, and the results they have when you deprive sick people of medications they need. You, this and a lot more goes on. These are crimes against humanity. They are completely lawless. Nobody does anything about them. Will they stop? Well, there are provisions in this agreement that says they will stop. Not in completely the language I would like, but leaning very strongly in that direction, enough to say, if this isn't done, if they don't let the medications in that are needed, then America, and America, I have to emphasize, America called the shots in Geneva. There may have been 5 other P5 countries there, but America calls the shots. Whatever America wanted out of this round of talks, I absolutely agree the other 5 countries would have gone along. Well, the 2 outliers are China and Russia. They wanted a fair deal for Iran, but they knew they couldn't get everything they wanted, so they tried to come. Russia was in the lead on this. Russia tried to come up with a deal that was absolutely, well, at least reasonably fair to Iran. Would give Iran things that it would agree to, let me put it that way,
right,
without absolutely getting Washington to veto the proposal entirely. So it was a very, very tough, fine line to walk. And Russia did a marvelous job on this, because if anybody gets credit for pulling this off, it has to be Russia. They're the ones who did it, just the way they've stopped an all-out intervention in Syria so far. If anybody deserves a Nobel Prize this year, Peace Prize, it was Vladimir Putin and Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister. And the people around them, I mean, the whole team that worked on this thing, the people that put in long hours to avoid war, to work for peace, that's exactly what they've done.
Right,
but again,
right.
We've got this manipulation going on, and I see provocations coming, falsely blamed on Iran. The accusations will be that Iran welched on the agreement. We'll see retaliation coming, and who knows just how bad it may be. It could.
Well, this is...
Go ahead, Larry.
You know, Stephen, this is exactly, I mean, it's the same script. The script does not change. And that is what we ordinary, everyday, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people need to understand. The script does not change. I can, any critically thinking person can predict with 99% accuracy what the next moves will be. Of course, the next moves will be to cause provocations to against Iran, to accuse Iran of welching, if you will, on the deal. This is the same script, and unless we understand that, then we're going to go for the ghost, or people, we won't go for the ghost, but the critical mass of people will go for the ghost, and we've got to understand this. So I think it's really important what you're doing as far as today and all the time for that matter, but on the show today, let's let folks know already what the game plan is. We know what their game plan is. It's the same as it has always been, and that is to make sure that any serious or real or viable progress is sabotage, and that is already what both the United States and Israel are trying to do, and they will exacerbate these actions. They will, in fact. We can bet on the fact that Iran is going to be accused of having broke this deal, having broken various components or aspects of the agreement. Meanwhile, nobody will mention anything about Israel's attacks on people in that region, not only in the so-called occupied territories. No one's going to mention anything about Israeli nuclear weapons, no one, but they will continue to try to whittle away. And I'm glad you used the word sovereignty, Stephen, because that's really what it's all about. Sovereignty, that is to say, the sovereignty of a nation state. This country, the United States and Israel, do not want Iran to have sovereignty. They don't. I mean, it's not even a question of how do we prove that? Well, just look at what they've done, even going back to the 50s, when the Shah of Iran, the puppet, stooge, bloody piece of manure, was put into, and he was a butcher, but who backed him? Who put him in there? Why, the United States, okay, the CIA, okay, it's the same script. So we have got to struggle to make sure that these countries, in this case we're talking about Iran, do enjoy sovereignty, that the people of that nation enjoy sovereignty. That's the last thing that this country of the United States wants. I call it, the government of this country, and it's not the people's government, it's certainly not our government, but the government of this country calls it democracy. I call it the hypocrisy of democracy.
Oh, it most certainly is, Larry. And when in 1979, the Iranian Revolution, when they literally cast off the repression, a generation of repression by the U.S.-backed Shah, and again, of course, he was a U.S. stooge installed by the CIA, and they finally got rid of him. And the story that proliferated through the U.S. media on the revolution to this day, 34 years ago, it's still the same big lie. The story is completely mistold. I mean, the Iranian people simply wanted their own nation back. They had every right to have their own nation back, and they finally got it after 25 years, and 34 years have passed since. 34 years of unending U.S. hostility. Do you think a couple of days in Geneva it will change that? I mean, there's no chance in the world that will happen, and the long knives are out to get rid of the Iranian government because it is independent. It is sovereign. It does value its sovereignty, and it wants to keep it. It wants friendly relations with everybody. And another fact about Iran that never gets told is that Iran has not attacked another country in centuries. in centuries, 200 or 300 years. Try matching another country's record up against the Iranian record way back before the 1930s. It was Persia, not Iran, a very, very ancient culture. But again, Iran is a peaceful country, threatens no one. There isn't any country in the Middle East that feels threatened by Iran. When Israel claims it's being threatened, it's a big lie. The only country that really threatens others is Israel. Israel is the regional menace. My God, look what it does. It wages wars in its neighbors, Lebanon, Syria, Israel is very much involved in Washington's war on Syria. This year alone, it attacked Syria by air five separate times. And the little that gets reported in the U.S. media, or got reported about this, were complete lies, just fabricated reasons why this happened. And the only reason Syria didn't retaliate was the last thing it wants is to get Israel to attack even more vehemently, to get Washington involved, because then there's a full-scale war against Syria, and that's exactly what it wants to avoid. So it literally took these attacks and did nothing. And Syria wants its sovereignty. It wants its own sovereignty. And I must say, what's going on there, there are lots of people in Syria that oppose the government. But the longer the conflict has persisted, the stronger the leader of Syria, Assad?
Are you there?
I'm there.
Okay. Yeah. The stronger he becomes, and the reason is because, and I've seen many interviews, and many of these interviews were given by people who, before the quote unquote conflict began, which was a U.S. Israeli induced conflict, but before it began in terms of weaponry, military actions, these people in the interviews that I saw were in fact opposed to the government. But now they're saying, wait a damn minute here. This is our country. Let us determine what happens here. And they have now taken more and more people, and I'm talking about the everyday ordinary Syrian people themselves, are saying, we don't want this foreign intervention. This is a sovereign country. It is a sovereign nation. Get out. We will handle our own problems. Thank you very much. So I just thought I'd finish that for you.
Oh, no, yeah, I've got to spit out his name. Bashar Assad. Mahmoud Abbas is the so-called coup d'etat president of Palestine. He was installed by Israel. His election was rigged in 2005. His term expired in January 2009. Here we are heading toward January 2013. He's still in office. Why else? What else should I call him than a coup d'etat president? But you've got Assad in Palestine, and you've got Abbas in Palestine, and you've got Assad in Syria, Bashar Assad. I think he's getting sick and fed up with the job. It's caused him so much heartache. But he has said publicly there'll be an election next year. He has said if the Syrian people want me to be president by electing me, then he will stay on and he'll be president. Above all, he says what needs to be said. It's the sovereign right of the Syrian people to decide who'll lead them. It's not the right of any other people, and it's more than this man saying it. This is written in stone in international law. I've quoted it verbatim in several international laws. It is absolutely illegal to interfere in the internal affairs of another country. The UN Charter says that. There's only one exception, and that's self-defense. If another country has attacked you, or if an attack is so imminent, you've got to do something to protect yourself. And even then, you can only do it until the Security Council acts. The Security Council has final say on issues of war and peace, not the U.S. Congress, the Security Council. And unfortunately, one country can veto the will of the other members, I think 15 members of the Council, 5 permanent members, the only ones with veto power. None should have veto power. But the vote can be 14 one way, one the other way, and the one is usually America. But again, you've got this stuff that continues with nonstop. Syria has gone over backwards to be cooperative to get this conflict ended. And so far, it's not ending. I don't see that it will. And even though Obama didn't attack several months ago, direct intervention in Syria is very much in the cards. And I expect a provocation of some kind or other to re-instigate that at some point ahead, maybe 2014. I'll be very, very astonished if it doesn't happen.
Oh, I think that, again, let's just follow the script. It's the same script. Of course there will be provocations. Of course the lapdog U.S. Corporate stream / mass media is going to continue to spout out and spill forth its lies and its propaganda. And of course, Stephen, you and I can sit back and literally, as I said, predict with a probability of 1% error. In other words, 99% accuracy. So, I mean, yes, but this can only continue as long as the masses of people in this nation are sleeping. We've got to change that.
If we don't change it, Larry, I think we're heading for what everybody should fear, and that's, we had a World War I, the war to end all wars. We had my dad was in World War I. He came back from France. World War II, a lot of my relatives were in World War II. I got lucky. We had a draft back in those days. I was lucky because I was in college during the Korean War, and I served my military service after Korea and before Vietnam. With the most exciting thing that happened during my time in the service was in October 1957 when the Russians made the first foray into space and put up Sputnik. If people remember Sputnik, I sure did. The base was in a turmoil for about 2 days. Then everything settled down and it was completely normal again. But, the Russians weren't coming. Nobody was invading. Nobody declared war. It was a very quiet time. America was waging proxy wars. They always wage proxy wars.
Yes.
There's always something they want to, some trouble they want to stir up someplace. But the Korea was over. Vietnam was really in the incubus state back in those days. Because Vietnam was literally targeted for regime change back in the 1950s under Eisenhower. And then it picked up, and Kennedy began that way, too. He began as a Cold Warrior. But along the way, he changed from Cold Warrior to Peacemaker. And in my opinion, that's the main reason why they killed him, because they wanted the war. The war profiteers profited. If there wasn't a profit in war, or if you couldn't get global dominance because of a war, what's the purpose of fighting? The profits matter most. The profits are so important. So to feed the profit-making machine of America's defense establishment, which goes way beyond the big weapons makers and munitions makers, there are a lot of companies that profit from wars. You've got to feed them, and they want it. And this goes back, this probably goes back to time immemorial, where people made money from wars. Certainly has been true in more recent times, 19th century, 20th century. In the early 1900s, George Selders wrote about this. Oh, I've got his books on my shelf. I've read a dozen or more of his books, and I forget one that he wrote about the warmongers, the war profiteers, and how they the munitions makers, I think was one phrase that he used, and he convinced they convinced governments in America and Europe to wage wars because they make so much money when the wars are waged. So if you take the profit out of these things, that's the way to stop them. But of course, the profits are there, and the huge profits. And I've actually got an article written that I haven't gotten out on war making about making the world safe for these war profiteers. I've had more time sensitive stuff I've had to get out ahead of it, but I'll get that article out. And it's so true. And this is what we see happen, one conflict after another, where literally throughout America's entire history, anybody can look this up and check it. It's all there in the public record. There isn't a single year in America's history from 1776 to today, including before 1776, that America has experienced a single day of peace. Look it up in the record. Discover it for yourself. It's there. You can research it. You can find it. I don't think there's another nation in history that comes even close to that hideous record. Of course, back in the old days, it was mostly the war against native people, where they were almost entirely annihilated, maybe 97% of them.
Yes, and I'm so glad you mentioned the indigenous native people, because I want to take the opportunity right here and right now to say to... I also happen to be part indigenous. My grandmother, I won't even go into that. The point is that on this day of so-called Thanksgiving, let us remember the genocide that was so horribly carried out against the indigenous peoples right here. And the U.S. is still doing that, not only in this country, but throughout the world. For example, the indigenous people of Jeju Island in South Korea, the horrible things that they are doing and had done for many years and are still doing now under the Obama regime. But to my sisters and brothers of the indigenous native peoples in this country and indeed throughout the world, I just want to say that I'm with all of you, and may we all continue to struggle for the peace and for the justice. But as they say, there will be no peace without justice. But let us remember our indigenous native sisters and brothers.
Oh, indeed, Larry. And the other big genocide that gets no play at all, Howard Zinn wrote about it eloquently, the Middle Passage, where nobody knows how many millions of black people in the slave trade coming to the Americas, not just the United States, but other countries in the Americas, the slave trade that so many black people perished. And anybody who ever opened a can of sardines, I mean, these people were literally packed in the hold of the ships like sardines, and many of them perished because of this. Of course, the ideal for the slave traders would be to get them all safely to markets because they were commodities to be traded for a buck. So you really didn't want to lose any, but so millions died. And when they did, they just dumped them overboard. That's the way they treated these people. You know, like garbage, throwing people overboard like garbage. That's another story that gets virtually whitewashed from history. But Howard Zinn wrote about it so eloquently, and also the war on indigenous people.
Yes, and so we have to understand. I mean, simply because I, for example, you know, am a black American with strong indigenous background, it does not mean that I don't have a love for humanity. My love has to be in total. It has to be for, that's why I constantly say, everyday black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, because if we don't collectively understand. I'll put it this way. I'm going to be positive. Let us collectively understand that our best interests are served when we come together as ordinary people against the tyrants. And that's what they are, whether it's a Barack Obama or any other bloody... Let us come together collectively as people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow, ordinary, struggling, everyday people. Let us take back that which we once believed in, or what this country at least claimed it believed in. Let's make that a reality. And it's going to be hard, but Lord knows we better do it.
Absolutely,
or there will
Larry.
Be no planet.
Absolutely, Larry. There's only one race that matters, and that's the human race.
Right.
We're all brothers under the skin, if we only would think about that more often. Larry, we're out of time. I wish we could go on. The music means I got a vamoose.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you. I love you, my brother. Take care. Stay strong.
Oh, thank you, Larry.
And read my writing at intrepidreport.com, okay?
Indeed.
Love you, brother.
Oh, indeed so. I look forward to getting you back. I'll shoot you an email. Join us again next week. Ooh, next week is Thanksgiving. Well, enjoy the holiday. We'll be around. Our programs will be on. And as I like to end the program all the time, do join us Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Make it a regular habit.